Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. And I have to say, this is a milestone event in the history of the podcast. The podcast first originated on March 31st, 2023. Today, on November 11th, Veterans Day, we are recording our 100th audio episode. And if anybody told me I'd be doing 100 podcast episodes a year and a half ago, I would have probably had your head examined, because I never thought I'd be at this point doing a podcast. But here we are. It's the 100th audio episode. And I am just grateful to celebrate this milestone event with my mentor, my soul sister, my friend, Reverend Patty Farino, who is responsible for the perspective that I've shared on the previous 99 episodes in terms of transcending loss, in terms of transforming relationships with our transitioned loved ones, for being willing to integrate psychology and spirituality to expand my belief systems and to have that transcend to my teachings and to my work with others. I'm blessed. And I've had, as you know, my own share of trauma, but looking at everything, the support I've had, the people in my life, I'm truly blessed. Before I invite Patty to share her thoughts and perspective at this point, there's several people that I have to thank immediately before we get going. First and foremost is Patty, who has encouraged me to go beyond my comfort zone in terms of reaching out to rarefied air guests to expand the scope of the podcast, for her support, her encouragement, and for ushering in the first episode of the podcast. That signified beginnings, and today the story continues. I also want to thank two of my former students who were persistent in getting me to consider starting a podcast and eventually launching one. Ainsley and Emma, wherever you are, thank you. And also Mario Fields, who is the voice and the face, for those who watch the podcast on YouTube, of the intro for the podcast. I also want to thank him for his service, and I want to thank everybody who has served our country, has kept us safe. I also want to honor my father, who was a veteran of World War II, for his service, and also those who have served, those who have died in service for our country, and for those veterans and individuals who are no longer with us, my thoughts are with them on the day of this recording. So with that, Patty, how's it going? That's the only thing I could probably ask at this point, because we have such a very cool friendship. So
relationship is strange.
The relationship, absolutely.
The relationship is undefinable. There's no category, there's no label for it. But number one, thank you. Thank you for those sentiments, those words, those reflections about how you see our relationship and how it's affected you and empowered you, helped you to transcend. I thank you for that acknowledgement. I mean, I'm blown away. I didn't expect that. My heart, my soul, I feel very, very blessed to have you in my life. It's wonderful. And number two, do you see all the alignments going on in today's 100th episode? 100 new time beginnings, new beginnings, a whole new round of episodes. And it's going to be interesting in years to come. You can look at your journey and podcast by hundreds of episodes. How has things shifted?
Oh, absolutely. I look from episode to episode to see how things have shifted, how the questions I ask have evolved, how I approach the podcast, how I approach new potential guests. Everything has evolved with this. It's like the transformation from day one to now has mirrored the transformation in my life. And by the way, I know you mentioned the book that we co-authored, When the Psychology Professor Met the Minister.
Slide it right in there.
Slide it right in there.
Amazon. You can type in Steve Roberts or Patty Pirino. Yeah.
You can find it at Amazon and Kindle and paperback format. Stuff was coming through you at life speed. And I had to record most of it and then transcribe it. But you were truly the inspiration behind it. Without you, there would have been no When the Psychology Professor Met the Minister. So I don't ever want you to underscore your role that you had in writing this book. You were every much as part of this as me.
We had a lot of fun during the pandemic, our talks, the work on the book, the walks in the woods, just the discussions and the way we chose the different discussions we were going to share.
Oh, yeah.
That process, you know, that was just a sampling of some of our, I always quote you, marathon conversations.
Oh, yeah. And I'm still eternally grateful to your husband, Marco, and my wife, Sherry, because they allowed those conversations to evolve. They were not threatened by our relationship. Individuals can be close-knit in a relationship, but not so enmeshed where they don't allow individualization to occur outside the relationship. And then when both parties come back together, it's like that relationship becomes enriched. But it takes a certain amount of trust, a great amount of trust, to be able to let that happen.
Yeah, yeah. And then to become another part of it. I would say that our friendship has four parts. You and Marco, because you worked with Marco on the book cover.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead, you guys go to it. You work with Marco on anytime you go out any place for photos. I'm not involved. That's you and Marco. Yeah. Because this was a project you envisioned and kept asking me to join in on. And that's just how I see it, because I've thought about it a lot. Because you go out there, I mean, you right away would go to, you know, mention, oh, I've got a book out there with an incredible story that might inspire you. I don't do that. It slides in the back door, because I don't feel like I'm in someone's life for different reasons, as a minister, as an instrument of God, Jesus, the source, Buddha. I look to all of them to kind of partner with me.
Yep.
So I can do something good. I don't want to be totally out there. It's more fun when you're walking like Merlin did. You know you're there to help, but you don't need the whole world to know what you're doing. It's between me and God. And my husband and my daughter, those closest to me, I have my inner soul circle is what I call it. I had my birth family, then I had a bunch of mentors through my life, boy. There were always mentors that just showed up. And then there came the time where I really just connected with those wise, intellectual, you know, totally conscious spirits that were available. And it's not for a show with people or, oh, look at me, look what I've got. No, it's about walking the walk, not talking the talk.
Yeah, we can always tell the integrity of a person by what they do, not so much by what they say.
Yeah, but we become a society that goes by what people say because of social media, because of technology. I can't tell you, it's very intriguing to me that you talk to people and they're like, so what podcast do you listen to?
Mm-hmm.
Because they want to know what the thing, where my mind is being shifted, because that's where I'm listening to. And they don't even realize that they're spending so much time watching podcasts or controversial theories or they're so busy that they've forgotten to use critical thinking and come up with their own thoughts.
Yeah, and that's it. I think many in society take things at face value and they put too much trust in those either media outlets that they listen to, those websites that they subscribe to, where really it's up to us to determine what is truth and what isn't. Everything we need, and I'm quoting another one of my favorite philosophers on the afterlife, Billy Fingers. It says, everything we need is within us. And if we go within, we will find those answers and we will discover those truths. And in doing so, we need to be able to listen to those individuals whose ideology differs from us. I saw something on Facebook today from one of my Facebook friends who said, I prefer to be a listener and not an agitator. And I think when we agitate each other, nobody's going to listen to each other. We need to be able to listen. We need to, and I'm going to quote Maury Schwartz in The Wisdom of Maury. That was Maury Schwartz's final transcript on Aging Creatively that was edited by his son, Rob. Stay human. And in times of chaos, in times of division, in times of uncertainty, we need to stay human with each other. We can't begin to discuss ideology without finding our shared humanity first.
Yes. So true. And that's the wisdom of our conversations. Every time we talk, you and I would dive deeper about the philosophies, about where we are. When the internet started coming, people could be anywhere in the world and receive a phone call from anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. That's something that shifted from your generation and mine. That you had to look for phone booths. If you wanted information, you had to go to a library. The 30-year-olds are that first generation that are privileged to have full access to information.
Yep.
Anybody can do a podcast and start sharing their points of view. And that's wonderful if you do align with it. But the other thing, too, is how much time are you living your life from a perspective that you're proud of, that you feel pleasant in? I think I see a lot of that is everybody's going into their corners. And I've seen this in so many situations. They watch their version, they watch their version, and they watch their version because you always have it accessible on your phone. But when people start to get together again as friends, as family members, and shut off the outside influences, talk to each other, figure out how you can have fun together again.
Yeah.
And there are those that are still doing it. There are those that are still doing it. There are those that are realizing, yeah, maybe I am spending a little too much time alone. Maybe I do need to figure out who I'm going to be in this world and how I'm going to respond to the people in front of me. How much are the outside politics really going to affect my life? There are people up in arms right now, throwing down the gloves, dropping friendships, which happened once before, but this time it seems very much more extreme. And I'm just wondering, like, well, if we just got back to just being friends and enjoying life, and leaving the politics out of it, just start to decide what it is you believe in using critical thinking. And we talk about that in the book, in the last section. Start to use critical thinking.
Yeah.
And what's critical thinking? Deciding how you feel personally about something, which goes back to what, you know, one of the first things I asked you. So what do you believe happens to you when your body no longer works?
Yeah.
It dies. The body is no longer a functioning vehicle for your spirit to inhabit.
And that's one of the questions that I ask. I do an inventory with my students in death, dying, and bereavement to just see where they're at with the whole concept of death, what they believe about death. And that's one of the questions that I will ask is that, what do you believe happens after you die? After you transition or after you pass away, and however anybody chooses to conceptualize that. So it's, what do you believe? And what you believe is great. I'm not going to question that. I just want to know where you stand. Because if I'm going to have a discussion with somebody, I want to be able to understand what their beliefs are, how they got to that point. What influences got you to believe the way you believe today? My job is to listen today. I have to hold space for that with the expectation that the other person is going to listen and hold space with it without necessarily agreeing or disagreeing with me, but just respecting my point of view and saying, Well, geez, where do we align in our differing beliefs, or where don't we align? And focus on where we do align so that we can start communicating on that particular topic. And that can be a blueprint for just about any, you know, any disagreement that we have or any differences in ideology that we have. But it's up to us to be able to initiate that as a society. We can't wait for anybody else to kind of be the impetus for that. We have to determine on our own that this is what we need to create the world of our own choosing.
So well said. Couldn't have been said any better. And that's the wisdom. You know, it's like in the book, Tuesdays with Maury. The author and Maury got together once a month, right? Was it once a month? Or was it every Tuesday?
It was 14 Tuesdays that they got together. And Maury shared his philosophies about culture, about relationships, about family, about spirituality. That is a book that has transcended time. I mean, you could put this book in a time capsule and it could be 2515. That book gets picked up 600 years later, after 600 years after it was published. And there's still going to be some wisdom is going to be there. And it's still going to be, and I've had students tell me, this book was published before I was born. And I'm getting teachings out of that book that are relevant to me now. And I mean, every semester in Death, Dying, and Bereavement, Maury's part of the classroom. He's my co-teacher.
Yeah. And I'm sure his spirit is very proud. Every culture that I studied when I was in a seminary, you always looked to the elders for wisdom. And part of what I think the society is trying to evolve from, the American society, is going from saying that the young people have all the answers, instead of the young people stopping and making time to listen to the elders and the wisdom that they hold. If you notice, in recent years, popular celebrities that once they got the ones that we grew up with, and as they reached the elder years, they changed their personas. That it wasn't about what the publicist said they should be or they should do. They became real. And those are the people that the public, the younger public, that, you know, your students should look to. Look to your elders. And if you're wondering if that's the right place to look, look to the wise ones throughout all history, and find the wisdom. And now I take it back, because there have been children. Remember my work with the Angel of Hope. There were children that were incredibly wise for young body lengths. You know, like the time that they were here on this planet could have been 16, 17 years. Could have been 5 years. I heard about children that were in, you know, like pre-K, that were just affecting people. And whole schools came out to the ceremony that I would do with the Angel of the Hope, or whole schools. Many students would come out for these ceremonies to honor a student that transitioned because the battle of some disease just ravaged through the body, but his journey was about teaching wisdom. This is the journey. You know what? You can choose how you want to respond to it. And who's to say what's right or wrong? I mean, that's part of what the mental illness is going on here, is people can't find peace in their thinking.
Yeah.
Where do I find the peace? That's where you get to look. You could go, I'm sorry, I keep looking at Grandfather Mountain. Behind you, you have it set up perfectly. I remember when that shot was taken. I don't even know. Like, the fact that when you took that shot, when we were standing there together and we were looking at those exact mountains, I never thought that conversation years later, we'd still be talking about it. And I'd be looking at that same viewpoint. It's pretty amazing.
It is. And I know, you know, with the hurricanes, Grandfather Mountain doesn't look like it does in the picture, but my gut told me to have this as the background today. Usually I have the logo for the podcast.
It's looking out over the generations. yep. over the transitions. And that's part of our evolution as human beings.
Well, you know, it's also a reminder to anybody who's listening and watching is to see the beauty in everything, even during times of chaos, during times of uncertainty. Nature will help you find peace and
yes. just
and can expand your horizons, expand your imagination. And that to me was one of the best parts of the trip, besides spending time obviously with you in Mirko. But me and Sherry and you and Mirko went to Grandfather Mountain, and it was just majestic. And it doesn't look that way now, but I do believe that in any type of transformation, it will regain its beauty again. And I remember that the beauty that I experienced, the peace that I experienced, and just the serenity that I experienced being up there. Plus, it was a place where I was able to confront one of my biggest fears. And you remember that.
Oh, boy. Talk of it. Share it with them. I think it's intriguing. You don't by chance have that picture handy, do you, to show them?
I don't. But what I can do when I edit the podcast is I have the picture. I can put the
added
picture in one of I can add it to it. So I have always been grossly afraid of heights all of my life. And Grandfather Mountain has this walking bridge that refresh my memory.
One of the highest peaks. It's a metal bridge, extremely secure. And there's a huge history to how the bridge came to be there on the peaks of it. It's an amazing experience. They have a wonderful setup there, but you are vulnerable walking on a metal bridge between two very high peaks. I don't remember the number, but it's pretty incredible. They even have animals on the next layer of it. But
yep.
in walking across it, you are vulnerable. And David was so afraid he wouldn't go near it. He was like, no, I'm not going to. Well, he was a volunteer ranger, I guess.
Our volunteer guide, his name, I believe, was Tom. And interestingly, you tried to get me to walk on that bridge, and I was just so paralyzed with fear that I couldn't do it. And then all of a sudden, Tom came by. He had this hat, shorts, just a very calm presence about him. In fact, reminded me of my academic mentor, Tom Brown, who transitioned in 2014. And when I was first hired at Utica University, he was there, and I was teaching a course that he had taught for years. And he guided me through that. He gave me some wise counsel, and he was just a good man, a good colleague, a good friend. And Tom was one of my first psychology professors at Utica University when I was a student. So you want to talk about coming full circle.
Here you are on the mountain.
Here I am
on the mountain with Tom.
Yeah, and basically my head is saying, no, don't do this. But my heart and soul kept gravitating towards him because I felt a calm presence. And Tom Brown had that same calm presence, which would always ground me. And so I ended up going with Tom halfway across the Grandfather Mountain Bridge. And I said, I'm good. So we came back. I saw the smile on your face. Sherry gave me a hug, and it was overcoming that fear of heights. I didn't cross the entire bridge, but the fact that I went on the bridge and took the risk of being vulnerable, knowing that perhaps I could fall to my own transition, but I did it in trusting that Tom and you were going to be wise guides for me. And they were. You both were.
He was by your side, and I stood right behind you.
Yep.
I stood behind you holding on, you know, like not you as I watched you hold on, and I was videotaping and
that's right.
But that's part of it, David. I mean, that's not an experience you can get by watching a video or YouTube. You were out there having a real, true, growing experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it was through companionship, through empathy, through compassion, that you were able to overcome something challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And in life, when we use our compassion and we look to each other to find a way that we can align, that's how we're going to make it a better planet. Just find that compassion for each other and figure out ways to align instead of always being angry at the way mm-hmm. the system is or the way this is or the way that is. You know what? Sometimes systems don't work. And that's how we can grow to see, can we find a way around the system or are we going to go right through it? And some people live on a survival mode. I've seen so many types of perspectives on how to live life. Mm-hmm. I lived on Long Island. I lived in New Jersey. I now live in South Carolina. I have lived all over the place, and I've had many experiences on a very real level. I never looked for being set apart because I have a very wide awareness. This is what I like to call it. When you look through history at the different masters of all the religions, what they did was they walked with a vast awareness of their choices, of all our choices, of the kind of people we can be. They are my mentors mentally. It's not about going to a church and sitting among a community, because every time I step outside, I didn't have to step outside my door. I have people land in the ditch inside of my house. And when I run out to assist them and support them, because it was an accident. It's what truly an accident is something you didn't mean to happen. And the person was so overwhelmed with my compassion for their situation, rather than it becoming this battle. And that's why I said to you, everybody can walk the walk. Yep. It's available. It's just making sure you find the perspective and the time. When you find you're among people that are angry, if you can help empower them to transcend and find a better, peaceful way, step away, because they'll self-destruct in their own corner. They'll surround themselves with other people like that, and they'll self-destruct.
Yep. And all you can do is plant seeds to those individuals, but you can't make them water the seeds. You can plant it. You can do it from a space of compassion, of empathy for, again, the shared humanity that we all have, regardless of where we're from. It's up to the individual to make a choice in terms of what they're going to do with that. You know, I look at going back to the whole, the crossing the bridge with Tom. Tom didn't know me. He never met me before, but he saw that I was hurting. He saw that I was fearful. And he just reached out as one human being to another to say, I'm going to help this guy transcend his fear.
I'm telling you, I almost felt like it was brother to brother. I was standing there and I'm thinking like, man, these two, a brotherhood. Yeah. You just trusted this man who was not bigger than you. His body wasn't larger so that you could feel safer, which is a normal thing. He was shorter, but his energy was like a brotherhood. We can do this together. Talk to me. Step by step, as he spoke to you, you took a step and he shared something. You took another step. He had you share something. It was beautiful.
And I may never see him again. I may never meet him again, but I'm going to be eternally grateful, because he's one of those, as I used to call them, as I still call them, transient angels who came into my life for a minute to help me get through a very difficult moment in my life, you know, and help me overcome a fear. And I know we've talked about this. What you fear is going to keep coming back to manifest. Unless we find a way to deal with it or manage it. It's always going to come back.
Otherwise, how are you going to learn from it? Fear is out there. You know, there's so many things to fear. This world is at such a transition point. Yep. Like the entire world, you look around to all of the countries, you pick up any newspaper online and just start scrolling through. You'll find some real interesting articles about what's going on around the world. And you can look at it and say, well, what do we want our world to be? I know the younger generation. We've seen youngsters out there, We've seen the next generation, 40-year-olds, trying to make a difference, 30-year-olds, 20-year-olds, even young girls rowing across to get people to recognize we're ruining our earth. We've got to do something.
Yeah. And you know, I go back to Ram Dass. I know he's talked about social action. He's talked about bringing individuals together from different ideologies. And it's all about doing social action with a compassionate heart and with understanding. And I think if we can do that, I think we're going to be able to listen to each other more effectively. But we need to commit to that type of a world. You know, we need to say that this is the type of world we want to create together with our fellow human being. If we don't make that choice, what we're going to see is what we're going to see. And we're going to have to try to make our own peace within it and find those helpers, those intuitives, those spiritual mentors, where we can create our own little pockets of a world that we want to see happen.
Absolutely. Yes. It's finding balance. You know, back to Ram Dass. I mean, I used to listen to him on cassette tapes. I actually saw him speak once. And just the energy in the room, it would have to be in the 80s that I just followed him. And something that he said is, you see yourself. He says, find the balance between where you are in your zip code and where you are in your connection to something greater than yourself out there in the ethereal. Yes, you want to take time for that, but you also want to be grounded and understand who you are as you move through this planet, through this world, through your society, through your culture, through your town, through your community.
Because if we don't know who we are, nobody else is going to be able to figure that out for us.
Yeah. Yes. And choose to be somebody that's effective in this world, living a consciousness that's about kindness. A consciousness about kindness. And once again, going back and remembering our relationship, one of the key things that you and I always go back to is the saying from Jamie Sam's books, Crow Medicine, which, you know, I hold things in my hands as a gift from you. It's a wolf and a crow together, because wolf is about the teachings. Crow is it, David? You wear yours too?
I'm trying to get this out. I usually keep my chains hidden because I don't want to hit the microphone and making all these kind of funky noises, but there we go.
There we go. Yep. We're walking, trying to be the teachers, the inspirations, but walking the walk instead of constantly trying to be out there making a name for yourself. I know of so many people that are out there just trying to make a name for themselves instead of doing the actual work. I'm not interested in being special. I'm interested in trying to teach everybody. A true master is not the one with the most students, but who empowers, inspires, teaches the most masters. And that's where you've come, David. You're walking your path, understanding that you have the capability of walking the path as a master. Master of what? Master of managing the experiences that life can offer, with good, bad, otherwise, and being support for others on theirs.
And understand that our ability to manage, even though we may have a high level of awareness, we're still living a human experience. And there are going to be days where it's going to be more difficult to manage than others. But we acknowledge that, we honor that, and we realize that those feelings are only temporary. We reground ourselves with what we know best, whether it's going out in nature, whether it's reflecting on Jamie Sams' teachings of animals and nature, whether it's Ram Dass, whether it's Maury Schwartz,
the same thing.
Whether it's Steele Peart or Jesus or the Bible.
Or the Bible, because there's such a strong presence of Jesus. Every one of them is available to help us.
Yeah.
Instead, I tend to go into the spaces in the quiet. People will find me up in the middle of the night, which is one of those nights that I had last night. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's funny, Dave, I'm very excited, and I hope you don't mind, but I want to share something. I've always stayed quiet on this. You know what I'm about to share. When David met me, I told him my only purpose, my passion, was trying to build a recreational facility in a certain spot by Republic Airport, which is a New York State airport on Long Island. The recreational facility would be designed and built for people with disabilities to use on a daily basis. But in times of disasters, that building would transform into an emergency operations center lifeline facility, or emergency management to help facilitate the delivery of supplies, of manpower, long term, to also help facilitate the evacuation of people with disabilities. Those same people who are already familiar with this facility because they've done programs out of there. State offices are there. Long Island has 8 million people. And it's also within this place is in an hour's proximity of New York City. You could probably get from New York City by train to Farmingdale Republic Airport within an hour. And it's all accessible by train because there's a railroad right there. But using it for people with disabilities, it would easily transform into a center, a facility to distribute all kinds of supplies and help evacuate people during a disaster. Why is this dear to my heart? Because I saw visions of it back in 1990s, before Katrina even hit, before we saw the first devastating shoreline storm. I started to see that there was going to be a transition on this planet. But as far as I used to say is, I'm just a housewife on the corner of Hunter and Whittier. Who's going to listen to me?
I'll listen.
So all this time, since you've known me, because actually January 1st of 2010, I started sending out the very first letters, and that was to U.S. Green Building Council, Long Island chapter, about building a facility that is... a green building that can sustain high winds. They've found all these products. They're out there and they're being used, but they're expensive. But knowing if you're building a building for sustainability, passive survivability is the term, you can survive with ease. And you build it right there next to the railroad. And it, if you look at the map, it's the center of Long Island with train lines that go to every point of it. We could facilitate so much, but I could never get anybody in a position of political or emergency management to listen to me because I'm a short, 5 foot tall woman. What do I know? But it was my vision. Remember, I've been doing this, trying to make people take notice of this since 2010, the year you and I met. And last night, I got an email from the Commissioner of Emergency Management, FRES, Fire Rescue Emergency Services of Suffolk County, saying he wants to talk to me. I've been praying, knocking my head on doors, on walls, for all these years. And to receive an email last night, just before going to bed, 11 o'clock, that somebody who's in a position to hear me has responded. So anybody that ever listens to this, if anybody ever listens to this podcast, remember, don't lose hope. Hold on to your faith. And if it really resonates within a passion in you, no matter what circumstances are coming at you, if you hold on to it, you can manifest your dreams. David, what was it that Neil Peart always said? Do you remember the quote? I'm hoping you do.
It's something about a dream isn't over until, and I'm paraphrasing this, until it's abandoned or until it comes true. And that was his definition of irony, and I'm paraphrasing this. But a dream is never over unless we give up on that dream or until it comes true. And you didn't give up on your dream. Things don't manifest in real time, but they manifest in Spirit Central time. And I look at when you got the letter. It was November 10th. It was the day, I think, before we had the Long Island experience. I take a look at other signs that had manifested for me prior. You know, a lot of times when my transition daughter, Janine, manifests, it's usually through numerology. And I saw 3-1 yesterday at a custom license plate. There was another wise wise one that had transitioned who I felt strongly connected to. Her name came up. And I looked at this and I said, we're going to be okay. And it's about time, because we need to be proactive, especially with all of the weather events that we've had and that have seemed to be increasing at light speed. You take a look at Florida having two hurricanes in a week. Long Island, I think the Smithtown Library got flooded during a rainstorm.
Not just that, an entire dam at one of the Avalon Park.
Yep.
An entire roadway that has been there since I walked there many a times. That was the place. In fact, Marco and I have some very special memories from our anniversary on Labor Day, mm-hmm. walking there because of a song written by a local by the name of Billy Joel that wrote a song about, we're sitting here in Avalon and they're closing mm-hmm. all how at the end of the season. And we were walking in Avalon Park as that song came on the radio. And we both started to laugh like, oh my gosh, things like that. That's walking with awareness, noticing mm-hmm. that there is a purpose for every experience if you honor it, good, bad, or otherwise.
And, you know, the other thing, Pat, that was coming to my head as you were talking about hearing from Suffolk County is that we're all stewards of the land. We have a responsibility to take care of Mother Earth. We have a responsibility to take care of the land that is nurtured us, that has sustained us. We need to be stewards of that land, and we need to work in collaboration with nature, and we need to be proactive to take care of the citizens who are also stewards of that land. And if that means coming through with proactive emergency management plans in the wake of serious weather events and catastrophic weather events, then so be it. It's better to be proactive than reactive.
Yes, I'm believing this is the beginning of a chapter that I've been dreaming of since the end of 2005, 2006, it started. Mm-hmm. After I was ordained, I started to visualize a series of disasters. I'm thinking, why are you showing this to me? And then I watched Katrina happen, and I watched it from a point of view, and I could see this happen. This is what I've been seeing. Like, this is what can happen to Long Island.
Yeah.
And I saw the shorelines. Impassable. And it's not about fear. It's about reality. Looking at the reality, you have to respect it and say, okay, mm-hmm. so what are we going to do to manage all these 8 million people?
Yeah. It's finding solutions to the challenges that are always inevitably going to manifest.
And I'm hoping that together I'm going to have the opportunity to dialogue with all that I visualize that would be helpful to do. Maybe I was visualizing as how they're going to do it, but it's a big challenge. Mm-hmm. If you have 8 million people, you know, each county, there's 4 counties on Long Island. Four counties. One is Brooklyn, one is Queens. Then you have Nassau and Suffolk. That's a lot of different people and airports on the shoreline that you can't get to. I saw this as early on as the 2000s. Before anything hit, I was in the emergency operations center during Irene and Sandy. How does that happen? I can only see God's divine plan directing and protecting me, guiding me, supporting me as I walk through my everyday choices.
Yeah. And you know, I think the dreams that we wish to manifest aren't going to manifest in real time, but they manifest in spirit central time. And sometimes, and I know we've talked about this, I've struggled with this, where I've wanted things to manifest quickly than spirit was going to allow it to manifest. And we both had conversations about this, but I've had to trust that this is the plan. There's a reason that beyond my human understanding why this is manifesting the way it's manifesting. But in time, again, if, like you said, if we commit to awareness, those answers become very clear. I think more so when we stop seeking for the answers, those answers become clearer once we just sit in the quiet.
Yes. Those teachings are out there with many mentors that are out there. There are many that are all speaking these words. These philosophies.
Yeah. And those are
go ahead.
Those are the people that we look to. We look to the helpers, we look to the wise ones during any time, but particularly during time of challenge, transition, and uncertainty.
Yes. That's when I think most people find their faith. Because I've been saying this for years to people that I've supported and empowered is you have to look within, because that's where you're going to decide how you want to write your story.
Mm-hmm.
You're the author. You're the main character, right? I've said that. How many times have I said that to you, David?
I've lost count of how many times you've said that, but it's very true. We are the only ones that can author our narrative. We're the only ones that can refine our narrative. We're the only ones that can change our narrative. Nobody else is going to do that for us. We can use influences from other individuals, say, how do these integrate with the narrative I want to create? But bottom line, it's up to us to determine the type of life we want to lead, how we want to lead it, and who we want to be part of our lives.
But looking at within, looking at my book cover, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And my book cover is differently abled, meaning that you have abilities. You might have to find a different way to do it, or you might have to choose different things. You are able, if you are down here. I was around children who were medically fragile, nonverbal, and they had a grand life with the children in Evangelist House. There was love around them. They were having an experience based on pure love, not interaction, but pure unconditional love.
Yeah.
What a gift. And if we're trying to give that to everybody, it's about looking within, seeing who we are in response and how we're going to walk through our lives. How many veterans came back from their tour with different abilities, different emotions, different forms of their body, and had to redefine who they were and how they were going to move about in their everyday world?
Oh, yeah.
There's such honor in their path. Those are the people that I have focused on, helping people through challenges. And it's been an honor. And I've learned from every single one of them, their families, watching their transitions.
When somebody takes us into their confidence and they wish to share the most intimate details of their life, I always tell my students that's birthed. It's when we, our first love, when we first get married, when we, our end of life chapter, somebody who has died that has affected our lives, shaped the narrative that we have. And when somebody is willing to share their story of their most intimate details of their lives, or the trauma that transformed them the most, I'm inspired. And it's a gift, because if they entrust you with their story, they trust that you're going to be safe. They trust that you're going to hold space for it, and they're going to feel secure. And basically, when you take a look at a path, people want to feel safe wherever they are. They want to feel secure, and they want to feel that they're listened to. And if we can create space for all that to happen, gradually we will create a world that is basically heaven on earth.
You know, your wife and Sherry and I talk. We always say, well, when we get together, we're trying to figure out all the problems of the world. If they would just come to us, we've got the problems of the world figured out.
Oh,
this
yeah.
is what Sherry and I say. Sherry says she says that with her sisters too. And and you and I, that's what we've been doing. But that's when you get older, you have the time.
Yep.
When you're younger, you're busy living.
As I've gotten older, I'm in my 70th year now. I've had a chance to reflect on my past. I've had a chance to reflect on how that past has orchestrated my present, how I can use my present now to create the future that I want to create and the growth that I want to continue to experience. And again, you want to talk about crow medicine. You know, crow medicine is a part of our lives, regardless of the category, whether they know it or not. It's honor, like you said, honor the past as your teacher, honor the present as your creation, honor the future as your inspiration. We're all doing that, whether we're aware of it or not.
Yeah. Although some people don't look at a future as inspiration. They look at a future as what's coming at me next.
Uh-huh.
And what they don't realize is, think about that thought. If you're always looking to see what the universe is going to send you next, that's what's happening. You're dodging it. You're looking for what you have to dodge or what you have to fight. It's a simple perspective of trying to say, well, I want to be inspired by my tomorrows. I want to be lifted up. I want to be hopeful that tomorrow's going to be better.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's when I created my company name. I chose Finding Hope. Finding Hope Ministry is trying to help people through challenges find hope. And that's what I did for a long time. This week is going to start a new time for me with communication with those in Suffolk County, helping them to understand the vision that I've been having for a long time as to how we can manage emergency operations for the long term, as well as give the thousands of people with disabilities who live across the Long Island metro area a place where they can go to have quality recreation, quality services, understanding where they're in a community of people that see them for exactly who they are, different, but they're able to have a good life.
Yep.
The vision came to me. And then for the next 10 years, I worked to try to make sure that it was a valuable and feasible plan. Could this really happen? And I know the basics of it will make a difference. That would be the greatest joy for me, between the joy that I have being a mom, a grandmother, a wife, and friend to so many, to be able to do something that would help people through some pretty tough challenges when you're living on an island would be great joy for me.
Well, and you know, hanging on to hope is always a good thing. And also, I'm going to paraphrase another one of my favorite philosophers, Neil Peart, believing in the goodness of humanity. I think if we can hold on to those two things, who knows what magic we can create together.
Yeah.
As a society, right. As a country, as a world.
Wow.
Yeah, we covered a lot of ground, Patty.
Usually do. During our marathon conversations, we did. It's just weird trying to do it with knowing other people can listen in. For me, that's strange. I'm just letting the words flow like we used to.
Yeah, I believe it's important for people that listen to this podcast to get an understanding. This is how we interacted. These are how we came to a lot of the material that we put into the book. This is how we came to those revelations through those conversations. And I knew when I did the podcast today that I wasn't going to have a set of set questions for it, because I just said, we're going to have a conversation, and to have people understand that this is how our relationship grew. This is how it developed. This is how we held space for each other.
Yes.
And I'd like to think we've helped each other grow, you know, in different ways. And that's a part of a friendship and a mentorship is that. It's
and a
mutually
soul family.
Beneficial. And a soul
that's
family.
A soul family. A soul family should be people that help to lift you up to be the best person you can be in your own way, that accept you for all the flaws, for all of the wisdom, all of the compassion, all of the partnership. I mean, David, we've been through a lot in the friendship too, you know, where we had to step back. That's part of a true soul family. And you can have many people, you know, it's so funny. There's a term that my husband always refers to. Billy Joel song. So many people come in and out of your life. Some will last. Some will just be now and then. Marco always quotes it. And it's so true, because people, there are those that are going to come in and you're just going to pass through each other's lives, and you're going to touch each other's lives and remember it always.
Yep.
You see a name, Carolyn, and you're always, oh, I remember Carolyn. It doesn't matter if they're in your life. Tom, you had somebody walk you across a bridge. You went back to Tom. So we do make an effect. We're a seed, and that relationship can continue to grow even if you're not there.
Yep. And there's one more thing that I want to share. And again, Neil Peart's been in my head, you know, for the last part of the podcast. There's a line in his book that is just so profound, is that we are islands to each other, building hopeful bridges on a troubled sea. And right now, the seas may appear to be troubled, But if we can build islands to each other and share that humanity with each other, the seas may become calmer over time. And that's what I want to leave our audience with today. Be islands to each other.
Yes, oneness. We are all here to have an experience. Let's support each other through oneness.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Patty, is there anything you want to share as far as closing comments?
It's been an honor. It's been an honor to be in your soul circle. And I'm honored that you've helped me through so much. I'm grateful to spirit, to all the wise ones that have been over my shoulder for all these years. I'm grateful. I there's no other words but grateful, thankful.
And for me, I echo those same sentiments. If you had not come into my life when you did, I wouldn't have this level of awareness that I have and wouldn't be looking at the world the way I'd be looking at it now. So for that, I'm forever grateful. And I remember you telling me there's no guarantee that this relationship is going to go on. And I would have been good with that because the weekend that I had in Long Island was enough to get me to think and to get me to explore things. But the fact that you stayed with me, that you encouraged me, that you continue to encourage my growth and also to avail myself of other spiritual teachers besides yourself allowed me to grow. And I'm continuing to grow and I'm continuing to evolve. And it's exciting that I'm still continuing to do that as I am in my 70th year.
And it's wonderful thing to say. To be witness to your evolution with no judgments. You know, we have observations for each other and we share them in a calm and loving way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a soul family. And that's the beauty of it. And if I can't even tell you how grateful I am. But thank you, David.
Thank you, Patty, for being a part of my life. I love you dearly.
To everybody out there, live your life. Use your critical thinking. And make it a good story. Even the times that are tough, even the times that you look back and you have regrets or sadnesses that go so deep, think about what you came through and who you are because of it. You can find pride and honor in that kind of a walk. It doesn't always have to be perfect. Let it just be. And show everybody who you are in the midst of the walk.
Absolutely. Thank you, Patty. Better words could not have been spoken.
My pleasure.
And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast from both me and Patty. We wish you peace.
Wishing you peace, always.